and welcome to the Known and Ever podcast. I'm Natalie Bromley, stepping in for Jamie Smith, our regular host and anchorman who is once again absent. Jamie, you big skiver. Joining me as ever are our committed and regular panellists, James and Kevin. We're here to talk about another away day at Sunderland. We're going to have a look at some internationals and we're going to look ahead to the Spurs game at home. But let's start with Sunderland at home. Another point away from home, I guess. That takes our tally up to three this season. We didn't lose away from home. More importantly, we have come to the end of this horrendously long run of away games that we thought we would never, ever, ever end. Cue cheers all around. James, it was a game of two halves, I think, really, it was Saturday. I think Clarets came out looking quite positive in the first half, and I guess we really should have had Sunderland way past any point of coming back by half time. But usual story, Sunderland came out in the second half with a bit of fight back, and Burnley seemed to retreat into a bit of defensive nervousness. What did you make of the whole thing?
I think it's a typical Burnley away performance, isn't it? You know, all season, it's been a story of games where we've performed in one half and then not the other, but we've still not done enough in either of them to actually secure 3 points. It almost feels like we're trolling our own fans at this stage.
It does.
We've seen it all season. How many times have we gone to like a weaker side? Or, you know, in the case early in the season, we went to West Ham. You know, they were really struggling with the new ground. Looked like the perfect opportunity to go and get that first away win. And we were, for the first half, woeful. It improved in the second, but it was, you know, too late by that point. And now, obviously, we've gone to Sunderland. They're rock bottom. They don't look like they've got a cat in hell's chance of staying up. And we played well for the first half, don't manage to score. And then second half, we seem to invite them to try and have a go. And It just doesn't make sense why we're so incapable, you know, away from home compared to at home. And, you know, it's not like we don't get chances in these games. You know, there's chances. And
yeah, you're right.
You know, we just need to take them. You know, particularly that Barnes one. He's 6 yards out. He just needs to get his foot on it in the right direction. It's a goal, and you know he puts it wide. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things we talked about earlier on in the season when we were in the euphoria of our heavy home wins that we're going, we were saying that we were really praising the team for managing to be ruthless in the home games around those type of teams that we couldn't beat last two campaigns. But we were doing the likes of Southampton at home, the likes of Bournemouth at home and Leicester. We were turning losses into draws and draws into wins, but that just doesn't seem to be happening on the road at all. Kevin, it's still a point away from home, and a lot of people do quite rightly point out that any point you get away in the Premier League is a really good point. You know, it's very hard to win away from home. Now, a lot of people, certainly a lot of the fans, really expected this to be our first win just because of Sunderland's league position and their struggles. But are we really bothered about where these points are coming from, or is it just a case of they can come from anywhere and just see where we are at the end of the season?
Yeah, of course they all count, and hopefully it will be an invaluable point what takes us on the road to safety at the end of the season. At the end of the season, we're not going to bother where the points come from. My concern is that I don't want to take this hoodoo in throughout the summer and into next season. I don't want to start next season still having not won. On the road, because we know it's obviously a psychological barrier at the moment. There's no way other way of putting it. There's no, you know, Sean Dyche has talked about luck here and there and this and that. I think that Mirror article we talked about the other week was talking about how we've been unlucky in certain aspects. Okay, that might be the case in one or two very small areas, but on the whole, we are a completely different team. Away from home and at home, both in the way we set up and also just in the way we apply ourselves and the things like the confidence and things like that. And it's very clear there's a big psychological difference between playing at home and playing away. And not winning away from home is obviously having an effect. And yeah, of course, over the summer you have a bit of a reset. Some people leave, some people come in. You've got that time to reflect. Sean Dyche will get back in and he'll be able to get them coming out with a fresh slate almost. This is providing we all stay up, by the way. This, if we go down, it's completely different. But if, providing we stay up, you don't want to go into next season still looking for that. You want to be able to break that and kind of release that something that's tying us back a little bit. So that's my concern.
Yeah, I think that's a good concern, actually. And I kind of feel like Dyche has addressed that himself this week. If you look at the post-match interviews, he's for the first time, he's been quite bullish with his approach with this. And he's sort of come out and said that he's not shying away from the really poor record on the road. He does admit that it's really poor and he does admit that it needs looking at. You know, he does caveat that by saying that point, that it doesn't really matter at the end of the season where the points come from. But Kevin, you're right. You know, we can't let this spill into next season because it just, we're not going to get the same amount of points next season at home than we are. So we don't want to be a second season syndrome side. We want to stay up and into a third season. So you're right, it does need looking at. James, the big pre-game talking point, and I'm coming to you because I just daren't even raise this with Kevin because I really am quite concerned about his anger management levels. But James, obviously the big pre-game talking point was the team list when it came out. And once again, Dyche went for Arfield and Boyd on the wings and dropped our record signing left winger, who is supposed to be the saviour of our creativity in the side, back on the bench. Now, I'm going to focus on Arfield here because we've gone over Boyd quite a few times. And I think there's not a natural cover for Boyd on the right anyway. There's nobody else who would come in and play that now Goodmunson's injured. So I think obviously Arfield's the most obvious one because it seems like it's either Arfield or Boyd, with Arfield getting the nod. He seemed to play better. And I've actually seen, I'm sorry, Kevin, but I have seen newspaper reports today, including the BBC, who have put Arfield as man of the match and even said he was our most creative player.
That doesn't say much, though, does it?
Well, no, it doesn't. But, James, what do you do if you're Dyche? Do you give Brady that game time and let him try and force his way into this side and to find his role in this team? Or do you go with tried and tested Arfield, who Dyche seems to absolutely rely on and think the world of? Or is it just a case of this negative nervousness away from home as opposed to a real opportunity to go for it? What would you do?
I'd drop Arfield.
Okay, do take some time to think about it, by the way.
I mean, there were some moments early on in the game where I just thought Arfield looked aimless, maybe is the best way to put it.
In what way?
He just doesn't seem to know what he wants to do with the ball. His touch has been, I think, poor this season. You know, there was one moment where, was the pass intended for Ward? Feel like it was intended for Ward, and you could tell it was definitely not intended for Arfield. It was hit with such power, and he cut it off halfway through and then gave it straight away, and you were like, what are you doing? It was one of the most frustrating things you've ever seen, where you could see that, you know, a good move had a chance of developing, and he's cut a ball out that clearly wasn't intended for him. I just feel like that the Brady situation, it's like when Hendrick first signed. I think, you know, maybe, I can't remember how many games in we were when Hendrick scored his first now, but maybe four or five games in, I think we were starting to talk, like, is Hendrick worth the money we paid for him? You know, maybe...
Yeah, we did.
Was he a bit pricey? Is he going to cut it at this level? And then obviously he scored that great goal, and he's come pretty good since then. You know, he's been playing a decent game.
It certainly feels, doesn't it, that people are saying that is it that Brady's poor, or is it that he's just not adapted to the league, or is it the Hendrick problem in that he just needs to find his feet? So
and Brady, I think what we've seen in him so far is it's not been what you'd expect for someone who's spent a club record fee on. I think he's, you know, obviously the free kick against Chelsea was fantastic, but his end delivery has been, for me, very disappointing. I think, you know,
do you think it's nerves, James? Do you think he's nervous? Yeah. I think he's feeling the pressure.
I mean, potentially, but then he scored that free kick against Chelsea. And, you know, you'd think in a dead ball situation, there's more pressure on him than in a...
Yeah, maybe.
Situation. You know, you've got the time to think about it. The wall's there. You know, you're trying to pick your spot. Whereas when you're in an open play situation, I mean, just getting the ball around the six-yard box aimlessly would be better than some of the crosses he's put in where they've gone straight out of play. So, you know, his end product has been disappointing. And, you know, when we shipped out Michael Cartney, people used to complain about his end product, but he was never quite that. But I think it is, you know, you do need to have a bit of patience really with him. I think play him more and hope that he settles in and the end product gets better, and, you know, make sure he works when he's crossing on the training pitch. But, and some of it obviously will come with playing with the strikers and, you know, knowing the sort of balls Andre Gray wants, which is something we've not been very good at this season. Hopefully Volks is up front with him, knowing what sort of balls Volks can get at the end of, and just keep trying to put him in the box.
Yeah, I think that's a really big thing for me. I'm looking at the games he's played just to confirm, and yeah, we've got to remember Brady has started 3 games for us. 2 of those games have been away from home, where we are not just very poor, but also we set up a lot more defensively than we do at home. So, you know, Brady's going to be a lot more, his job's going to be a lot more difficult against, in those away games, particularly against the likes of kind of Hull and Swansea, where we played quite defensively. So the only other game he started was at home to Chelsea, which is a difficult match in itself, but also it's his first full debut for the club. All those things make it a bit more difficult to judge off. And then he's come on for the last few minutes in 2 more away games and struggled to make an impact. I think when you look at it that way, I think it's a little bit harsh to judge him too strongly. Like I say, we took Hendrick quite a while to settle, and when you look at saying he's only played in 1 home game, and that was against the best team in the country, one of the best teams in the world right now, and he scored. Then I don't think we can kind of look at him too negatively. The only other games he's played have been in away games when everyone's been very poor, and we've played a system that hasn't suited him very well. And like James said, he's not had much of a chance to get used to the way we play with those attackers, because Andrew Gray has probably touched the ball about 6 times in all those games combined. I just think the way you combat that is not by giving him 5-10 minutes at the end of games. I think he really needs to be getting into the team and playing more often. Having said that, I do think that he'll come back into the team now we're back at Turf Moor.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I said earlier about the way that we set up defensively in those away games, and I think that probably came into Dyche's thinking with leaving him out as well. I'd be very surprised if he continues on the bench now we're back at home and playing with a bit more freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing for me is that I think Dyche has just been a little bit too quick, a bit too hasty to drop him. I think it feels like he's been very harsh and dropped him at the first sign that he didn't think that he was is quite where he wanted him to be. Yet we've talked before about players who've had a really long poor run in the team, especially when they're not particularly performing very well. And Dyche seems to persist with them over and over again. So he makes some very odd selections sometimes, and you feel like he's a very loyal manager, but that loyalty feels misplaced sometimes. With certain scenarios, it's very odd. Kevin, just sticking with you, the one positive pre-match news was the return of Stephen Defoe to the bench, which obviously was very, very welcome news to all of us, because I think the side is crying out for the creativity that Defoe can bring. Sadly, he didn't make it onto the pitch, which seemed to just be incredibly frustrating. It was a game that was crying out for some creativity and just to try and get some chances there, and it just didn't happen. Now, why do you think Dyche didn't put him on the pitch? Do you think it was down to fitness, not wanting to risk him? Or do you think by the second half, when Sunderland came at us and we were sort of back to the wall a little bit, do you think Dyche was just a little bit too nervous and wanted to go very defensive as opposed to bringing him on to try and attack?
I think it is a mix of the two. I think that to force somebody who hasn't shown that he's the fittest player for Burnley in this season. He's obviously had a few struggles with his fitness throughout the season. He's been out of action for a long time. I think he's only played that one reserve game, if I'm right. Certainly not a lot of football he's played anyway. And I think he was on the bench not with any intention of actually using him. I think if we needed to use him, we would have used him. But I don't think he was there with Dyche thinking, okay, let's get him on with and get him on and playing. I think he was there just to ease him back into the system. And if we needed to play him, we could bring him on. But similarly, again, something else we've seen with Stephen Defoe is that we've doubted this season whether Sean Dyche really trusts him defensively in a 4-4-2,
yeah,
and whether he fits into that system. And when you've got that, you've got three factors combined. You've got just that fact alone that Sean Dyche doesn't trust him as much in a 4-4-2. You've got the fact that we were coming under a lot of pressure, and we really needed to keep that stability, really. And if Sean Dyche doesn't trust him in that system, then that kind of breaks that stability. That's multiplied again, but those 2 points, with the fact that he was injured, I think even if he was fit, I think the fact that he has been injured and has been out and probably needs a bit of time to settle into it, it just wasn't the right situation to bring him on, I don't think. If he'd been not been out injured, or if he'd been back for quite a while and back in, he was fully into that rhythm of playing and first team football, we might have been more of a case to bring him on. But I think there's three factors there that probably weighed into Sean Dyche's thinking, and I wasn't surprised to see him remain on the bench. Obviously, I would have liked to see him come on if the situation was right for him, because we needed a bit of creativity. But I wasn't surprised at all. That he remained on the bench.
I agree with all of those points, and I think that's probably the right approach. But I think it's just so frustrating for fans, and we've talked about this before, that we just want to see him play. He's one of the most creative players and the biggest flair players we've had at Burnley forever, and it's widely anticipated that he's going to leave us at the end of the season, that he will go somewhere else. And if he does, I just feel like we've missed an opportunity this season to see him play as much as we would. But who knows? In Dyche we trust, I believe, is the phrase that we should all be using. So I'm sure he's got a game plan with that. James, can I just come back to you just for my last point on Sunderland, actually, before we move on? Just picking up on something that you said in the early part of the podcast. Obviously, one of the key chances in the first half was that Barnes miss. I think there was also a good chance in the second half that Vaux missed as well. And we've talked before about the ruthlessness of our strikers in front of goal. Where do you stand with our strikers? I mean, do you feel like we are a side that's not scoring enough goals? Do you think we've scored about enough? I mean, we've scored 31 this campaign, which is already 3 more, I believe, than the last season that we were up here. And it is about average for the sides around us, for sort of lower mid-table sides. But it just feels like we're missing too many chances. You know, Barnes, how he can score that amazing goal against Liverpool, which was a much harder chance, and then miss the one against Sunderland. I mean, where do you stand with our strikers at the moment, and what's your best two? Who would you play?
I'll start with the last question first, because it's easy. It's got to be Vaux and Gray.
Yeah,
proven partnership, proven at the Championship level. You know, the number of goals we scored together, the understanding they've got together. You know, we've only really seen Barnes and Gray work once. And, you know, I feel like Barnes is more of a disruptive influence rather than a more tactical player, and Gray just seems to have a bit of a connection with Vaux. You know, Vaux wins the ball in the air. I think a lot of the time, you know, Barnes challenges for the ball, but does he win it as often in the air as Vaux? I don't think he does. And I think Vaux is the better finisher of the two. I'd definitely say Vaux is the more complete footballer, even though you'd maybe say that, you know, Vaux isn't necessarily the best for his feet, because he is a big lad, you know, he's a force in the air. But he can still take a ball down really well, and he can still finish a chance from sort of close range, which is what Barnes obviously didn't do. You know, if you look at the Barnes chance on Saturday, if that falls to Andre, I think he definitely scores. He at least makes the keeper work from that sort of range. I think for me the problem is the way we play for our strikers. And, you know, I think we've scored a reasonable amount of goals at home. I think the problem is that we've just not scored anywhere near enough away from home. You know, there's only really the game against Lincoln in the Cup, you'd say, at home, where we missed a lot of chances that we should have scored. Whereas away from home, it seems every week we're talking about chances that really we should have taken but didn't. Gray was running the channels well. I think that's a big part of the problem. Andre Gray should be nowhere near close to running the channels. That shouldn't be what he has to do. I mean, it's a he's good at it. You know, he'll chase lost causes. He's, I think, in most games we've played this season, probably the quickest player on the pitch. But he needs to be in the middle. He needs to be in places where,
yeah,
if you get the ball to him, he's got a chance to have a good angle and get a shot off and score. And we saw how that can work against Sunderland at home. You know, those balls came within the, you know, the confines of the penalty area for him to run onto, and he's taken a hat-trick away from it. You know, I think you've got to play to your strengths, and our strength,
yeah, we're not doing that, are we?
It's Andre Gray. And, you know, you've got to look for ways to exploit the ball in the back. There's been some teams we've played this season that have awfully slow defences, you know, that are just right.
Yeah, we don't run at them. And Andre is really fast. Yeah, we're not playing to his speed and his strength, and you're not allowing him the ability to do that.
And that's it. In most games this season, I'm sure he's been the fastest player on the pitch.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You've got to take advantage of it. You've got to play to people's strengths.
Yeah. Kevin, just a final point on this for you. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Next season, do you persist with Barnes, or is he at the end now? What is your view?
Well, I was literally just about to interrupt and say that I wouldn't be disappointed or surprised
if
both Barnes and Vokes leave in the summer if we remain in the Premier League. I don't think either of them are up to the Premier League standard. They've done a decent-ish job, but neither of them look like Premier League players. And if we want to remain in the Premier League again next season, if we stay up, then we need significantly better quality up top than both of those players.
We need some youth as well. Some of these players are our aging a little bit now, so we need to refresh it. No, I agree. I think it's a frustrating one. I think we'll leave Sunderland there and we will move on, but I think at the end of the day, it's another point away from home. It has extended that gap for away from the bottom three, from 7 points to 8 points, and it's just another game ticked off. And whilst it's frustrating not to get our away win, we're back at turf now and we're back onto a regular fixture list, and let's see where we can go now. I'm sure Dyche will be firing the guys up on it. Again, we've said this before, but it wouldn't actually surprise me if we end up getting something from Spurs. But we'll move on from the Sunderland game now, and we will return to our regular and original feature, this week's Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week.
So we stay with the Sunderland game.
Whoa.
Oh my God, you see, this is what happens, listeners. I move roles and I forget.
That's because you weren't teed up. Do you want me to tee you up?
I wasn't. Please, will you tee me up for Tweet of the Week? Thank you, okay. Kevin.
So we'll leave Sunderland there, and now it's over to Natalie for Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week.
Indeed. Thank you, Kevin. So we stay with the Sunderland game for this week's Tweet of the Week. And that's Tweet of the Week. I'm going to try that again.
Tweet of the beaten. That's
good. Leaving the Sunderland game behind. Indeed. So, for the Sunderland game.
Oh, God, yeah, of course. And I'm having a real problem saying Tweet of the Week.
What's it going to be next week?
Tweet of the Week. God knows. I'm going to try that again. Okay. This week's Tweet of the Week goes to Simon Finch, and he asks the question, is the anomaly our home form or our away form? Staying up was the aim at the start of this season, and we're on course to do that. Thank you, Simon. That won this week's Tweet of the Week. So moving on, we obviously have a break this week where all of us, well, a vast majority of our squad are on international duty. We've got, as has become, I think, the norm recently, quite a few players off with their nations. We've got obviously Heaton and Keane away with England. We've got all three players away with Ireland, Vokes again with Wales. And interestingly, Mr. Arfield has been called up to the Canada squad, and they play Scotland on Wednesday. So I'm sure quite a few people will be having a look at that with a raised eyebrow. I think there's a bit of a grudge match going on there. But James, what is your view of international breaks? I mean, obviously, as a football fan, it's quite, especially with England at the moment, being not the most comfortable to watch. A lot of people do miss their club football. But do you think it's a good or a bad thing to have quite a lot of your squad away on international duty? I mean, there's criticisms over how much rest they get, or whether it keeps the momentum going, obviously the risk of injuries, or whether it takes their focus away from the club. What's your view on having players away with internationals?
I mean, obviously, there's a concern there that, you know, players could get injured, etc. But you have those concerns all the time, aren't you? It's like, you know, a player could get injured on the training field. So, personally, I don't really watch much international football, you know, sort of until the tournaments come round, I sort of give it a bit of a miss. But, I mean, sometimes I think it's just nice that it gives you a little bit of a break. I think it depends where you are in the season. Like this international break coming up, when it does, I'm not going to complain too much because, you know, we've been on the back of having, you know, a not very good run, obviously playing every game away from home. And there's a few injuries in the squad. So I think it presents a nice opportunity for players to rest up. And it's a big weekend in the cycling calendar, so I can watch that instead.
Okay, that's fair enough. I think Birdie set his stall out quite.
Just to make myself even more of a international football hipster, it's years since I've watched any international football, even including tournaments. So I can go one better than you, James.
You absolute hipster. I still think I only watched one tournament game last season, maybe.
Do you not find it exciting, though, when Burnley players are involved in international? Because it certainly makes a difference to me, and I will pay much more attention to size. When Heaton got his first England cap, albeit for that, 3 minutes, whatever it was, and then when he played that half, I was much more interested because it's a Burnley player.
Just waited for everyone to tweet about it. That's how I found out.
You two are so negative.
I've got to say, I did. I searched his name on Twitter, saw a picture, and that was it, really.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got to be honest, I'm going to really lay my start here. I don't really watch a lot of football other than Burnley. I watch every Burnley.
No, me neither.
I'm the opposite. I watch a lot. But I don't watch at the same level of commitment as I do to Burnley, obviously, because it's much more exciting.
Football's just not what it was these days, I don't think.
I know. Okay, well, what about the really exciting thing with Arfield this week? Obviously, it's been well documented that he's been left out of the Scotland side, weirdly, for years, and was actually told, no, you're never playing for Scotland. And obviously, Canada, he's gonna face Scotland at the weekend. Does that make you excited at all? Does that make you want to watch it?
Did you really just ask if I want to watch Scott Arfield play?
I did. This is a serious question. Oh, yeah, actually, that was a bad question. You know what? It wasn't until you actually said that I thought, yeah, maybe strike that question. Birdie, does it not make you want to watch Scott Arfield? Oh, no, I can't.
I believe David Edgar's injured, isn't he? So, I mean, there's no reason to want it. Because we're Burnley fans. Sorry, I had a bit of the Kevins then, didn't I?
Yeah.
Burnley fans are just obsessed with former players. So
that's a good thing, though.
I'm more keen to watch an international if, say, Marvin Sordell got called up. Or, you know,
oh, my God. So you'd rather... Oh, I can't even
hear that.
Oh, my goodness. You
know, Sard Berisha, is he still playing for Albania? I did see someone on Twitter the week,
actually. That
he got a big hero's welcome when he visited Albania, didn't he?
Maybe. Well, I think
Australia's A League.
It is. Well, I think I was obviously going to get really excited and see if we could build some really good support for Scott Arfield in his quest against Scotland. But listeners, you're going to have to help me out on this one because I picked the wrong audience with Kevin and Bird to ask them to get excited about Scott Arfield international. So do tweet me. If you're watching the game, do tweet me and let me know how you think he's getting on and see if he scores. I imagine that'd be pretty exciting. But turning, I guess, our England chances, Keane still waiting for his cap. Kevin, do you see him getting one in this round of fixtures, or do you think he's there purely for backup squad at the moment?
I don't know. What is it? Are they competitive? Are they friendlies? I don't even know who the games are.
Who are England even playing?
Yeah. If it's a friendly, I think I'd expect him to get play something. If it's not, then probably not. But I don't know who we're playing. I don't know what kind of competition or whatever it is. So I don't know what are the fixtures. Does anybody know? Anybody? Is anybody there?
I did a count. I was just going mad then and saying no, this is really exciting, and I was on mute. I did a Kevin, but yes, they are. I actually thought they were two friendlies, but one's a qualifier. So they're playing Germany on Wednesday.
I've just looked it up. It's Lithuania. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, but it's a qualifier.
You could put us three out against Lithuania.
Yeah, but that's what I mean.
That'd be amazing.
Oh my God, can you imagine? But seriously, from a Michael Keane's obviously got some real ambition to play international level. Surely these are the fixtures that you would hope that he gets his cap from it, to at least try and get his profile going. I know how much you two love your profiles.
What other defenders are in the England squad?
There is obviously, well, I think Cahill and Stones.
There he is.
There are many. Oh my God, you're putting me on the spot here. Hang on a second. England squad. I suspect that most people expect him to play Stones and Cahill at the back. I don't know who else is there. They are pretty poor.
I've just gone on, actually. Tom Heaton and Michael Keane are first in their categories. Does that mean they're definitely going to start? Is that how we put in it?
I would have hoped so.
Do you know what, actually, while we are talking about England, something I did notice, and I am actually outraged about this, I did almost get excited about international football to be angry about this. Marcus Rashford getting in the squad.
Yeah.
That is obscene.
Well, I think we'll move on there. Listeners, I'm sorry, I did try and build us some kind of exciting international segment for you, but Birdie and Kevin were having none of it, and I think I'm going to struggle to get them. I probably struggle more to get them excited about international football than Burnley's next away fixture, so apologies. We'll move on, and apparently I'm told that at this stage I have no option but to concede and allow Birdie into Kitely Corner or Marvin's Mentions or whatever it's called these days. So, Birdie, over to you. Let us know what's happening in the players that have left us.
Great week for Kitely Corner, in that he's back in the side.
Hooray!
Didn't score himself, but watched the highlights, and it was fantastic to see him celebrating with Marvin Sodell, because great week for Marvin's mention, he scored a brace.
Way, well done, Marvin. I can't tell you, I'm nearly as excited about your international enthusiasm as I am about this feature.
Well, Marvin Sodell, two excellent back post Portugal goals. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough for Burton, who got beat 5-3. But two great goals from Marvin. Good to see him doing well.
Bring him back.
Bring
him back. Bring him back.
Do you think he can
back.
Bring some creativity to our side if we bring him back here? Who knows? I don't know. So is that all of your updates, Birdie? I'm unfamiliar with this new feature. I don't know whether I need to give you more time to talk about maybe Chris Eagles, who left us 25 years ago or whatever.
No, Chris Eagles is quite a few weeks down now. Never quite had the appeal, I don't think, that these two characters did. Actually, I didn't really like Marvin Sodell at the time, but I think he tries hard, doesn't he? Loves the game.
Did he get married kind of the night before, or like a couple of days before the match as well?
Did.
I'm sure. Did. So what a great week for him. He looks so happy in his wedding photo as well. He looks
Who
so
are we
happy.
Talking
about? Marvin.
Marvin Sodell. Marvin. Oh, Marvelous okay. Marvin.
He got married and then scored two goals, and what a great week for him.
What a week.
So,
there you go.
Since you asked about Chris Eagles, he did start March off in a goal scoring way. Well, scored two to start the month.
I'm honestly, this is my favourite part of the podcast. I can't begin to tell
actually,
you Saturday.
We're going to go off topic for a moment, but Kev mentioned weddings.
We're going to go off topic, James.
That's not off topic.
It reminded me
You've
of
got 30 seconds, Birdie.
Fantastic tweet I saw the other day from my local police force, Barrow Police, that a bride and her new mother-in-law both arrested on Saturday night for disturbing the peace at the Abbey Hotel. Woke up in the cells the next day. Not off to a great start, that wedding, so hopefully Marvin's was far better.
Great, thanks for that.
Yes, thanks for that. I'm going to regain some control of this podcast now, and I'm going to move us away from this farcical nature
of
this
time?
Section. It's not time just yet, Kevin, I'm afraid.
Oh.
We are going to move on to preview the Spurs game. Burnley finally get to go back up to Turf Moor after the international break. And we get to actually watch our side from the home stands and cheer them on and hopefully another win. Kevin, when we played away at White Hart Lane, I think that was widely considered to be one of our best away games this season, certainly one of our best away performances despite the loss. And it seemed to be a turnaround of some really poor showings away from home. Do you have any expectations of the home game? Even if we play as well as we did with the home advantage, and obviously, Spurs will want to win because they want to keep pushing for that top four. But do you have any expectations, or do we think this is just not one we stand a chance?
Well, it's, I mean, it's hard to say with Burnley at Turf Moor this season, because obviously we are so, we've had so many very good results and unexpected results. Having said that, Spurs are in phenomenal form at the moment. They are really playing very, very well. I think they've won kind of loads of games in a row. It's a long time since they got beat. I'm looking through their results here, trying to find the last time they got beat, and I've just scrolled too far and I can't find anything. So obviously they're playing very, very well at the moment. It'd be interesting to see what happens, actually, because we've done so well at home this season, and it'd be interesting to see how much of that is built on momentum, and whether it's been kind of, is it like a month and a half or something like that since we last played at home. Really interesting to see if that has an effect on our game, because we've been playing so well at home, but we've always had, you know, maybe a 2 or 3 weeks between home games, whereas this time it's been a very long time since we've experienced winning a match. It's going to be a big test. It's not something we've really had to, it's not really a test that this squad of players has had to come through before, I don't think. So it's going to be really interesting to see just how we react, whether we can go step straight back into our home routine, whether, you know, getting into our home dressing room, stepping out in front of the fans, whether that we just, you know, snap right back into it, or whether being so such a long time without winning a game and actually having a couple of quite disappointing results and performances within that time, whether that affects our confidence coming into Turf Moor, because that it could be big, because if we've gone that long time without winning, we then go back to Turf Moor and it doesn't carry over, and even worse, we then have a mediocre performance, get maybe kind of comfortably not really in this match, does that then start to add a bit of question marks to our home form? Does that then affect the players? You know, there's so many fans saying, you know, we're safe now, but you know, it would be a historic collapse. I think it would be a historic, like, just to preempt James, it would be a historic relegation if we did, but you know, given our away form, if something happens to take our home form back down to anything like our away form level, then it's not completely over. You know, that's the concern. Yeah. I think it's a really poor match for us to come back to, actually, is this one.
We'd prefer maybe, like, mind you saying that West Brom have had a great season, we would prefer somebody like, I don't know, Bournemouth at home, wouldn't we? Or just like a side who would be a challenge, but we would be one that we would be expecting to win. I think I agree with you, and I think certainly the loss of momentum and confidence was something that I was going to flag. Birdie, what's your view on this? I mean, it's like Kevin says, a lot of our away performances have been built on the fact that we felt fearless at Turf Moor, and every single time we stepped out there, we just thought we were going to win. And it's been such a long time since they experienced that, and it's such a long time since we've been at home. Will they have lost that spark?
No.
Great.
Excellent. Very good. Thank you for that, James. Would you like to elaborate in any way?
I think we're going to be perfectly fine at home, to be honest.
Yeah, I suspect you're right.
I just feel like at home, that there's just something about being there. You know, the players seem more comfortable. I think, obviously, the extra support helps. It's just hard to put your finger on it, but you know, we've seen that obviously our poor away forms continue through all of the season, and it's never really affected us at home. So I think, you know, we have the strength to carry on through it. It's just,
Do you think it's going to make a difference that Kane's injured, or do you think they've just got enough in their squad that they're still going to be a very strong opposition?
I think Spurs are always going to be a pretty strong side. Yeah. Obviously,
they are a good side this season. They are building a really good squad, and they're just so good to watch. It's going to be entertaining. I just hope it's not a particularly painful. I hope we compete at least.
Yeah, and I'd expect us to compete. You know, we're at home. Kane is going to be a big miss for them, and hopefully it'll mean they're lacking something a little up front. But you know, there's a lot of good players on that side. You know, you look at Eriksen. You know, Walker's been having a great season, and then they've got the option of Trippier, who's no slouch either. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of attacking threats there, and you know, they've been a really good side, but they're not Chelsea. I'd say they're clearly very beatable, and we managed to get a point against Chelsea, so there's no reason we can't get at least a point from Spurs.
I think you're right. Okay, very quick question just to round off previewing the Spurs game. Do you, quick yes or no from both of you. Do you start Brady?
Yep.
James. Ooh, Kevin, yes.
I'm not James, but yeah.
Sorry. Thanks, James, Kevin. James, Kevin.
Yes.
Good. Yeah, I agree.
Who was that? Yeah. Who said that?
We have an echo. Yeah, I think absolutely unanimously on the panel this week is that we all start Brady and we really go for it. And again, it's one of those that we would put into the, oh, I hate to use this expression, but free game category, in that we've got nothing to lose. We're at home where we can get into our stride and show that slight arrogance that we have and confidence to our game where we just believe that we're going to get, beat anybody on our day. So hopefully we'll be back to winning ways. With that, we have to turn to my most painful feature of this podcast, and we hand over to Kevin for the Predictions League.
Predictions, predictions, it's the Prediction League.
Predictions. Yes, what a week it has been. I have now, once again, for the second week in a row, I'm the only person to score points. Obviously, you guys, Jamie, James and Natalie, were all far too optimistic, going for not just wins, you went for comfortable wins. Jamie went for 2-0, but Natalie and James
both went for 3-0, didn't we?
But both went for 3-0.
It's because we're positive.
Too positive. You know, we get accused of being really, we get accused of being known in negative, but actually we're mathematically far too positive. Me, on the other hand, I just couldn't see us win. I don't think we're going to win away from home this season. And I thought that before the match. Actually, you know, when we were approaching the match, I regretted my prediction. I was convinced we were going to get beat. So actually, in the end, for me, getting a point was quite good. I didn't score full points. I went for a 1-0 draw, which meant I only got 1 point. But it does mean that last 5 games, I'm the only person to score points, and that's on 2 occasions now, which means that's 4 points in 2 weeks.
Right. Do you want to get this over with and tell us who's doing well?
Which means that I'm now up pretty much double the points of second place James. So I've got 17 points. James has got 9. And Jamie's behind with 7. Natalie, way back, well back in 4
last
points.
Last 4? Oh, my
which
God.
Which is just... That's just
painful.
We're getting towards the stage, Natalie, where we're going to have to consider your position of a podcast. Because,
I clearly know nothing about football.
if this was a job interview, you wouldn't get it.
Oh, no. I'm the Sunderland of the podcast. This is
quite
terrible.
A sad row, I think.
It is sad. Well, let's try and redeem ourselves, and we'll have some predictions for you. We started off with speaking to our Jamie, who, despite being absent this week, did actually find himself the time to send us a prediction. So here is Jamie's prediction.
Well, sorry I can't be with you this week. As you can tell, I've pretty much lost my voice from the weekend, and I'm also sulking because Burnley were so terrible. Prediction for the Spurs game, feeling quite downbeat at the moment about the team, not playing very well. Dash said the team very cautiously, negatively. Spurs were on a fantastic run, so unfortunately I can't see anything other than a defeat, which would be really painful because we need to pick up results at home. I'm going to go for Spurs to win 2-1.
And Birdie, let's have one from you. I'll let you go next.
Well, you know, I may maybe not learning my lesson here about being too positive, but fancy us at home. So I'm going to say a 2-1 win.
Oh, positive. Kevin?
I'm really sorry. I'm hoping my streak is going to come to an end, because I'm going to go for a negative 2-1 defeat.
Oh, no. Well, I share James as positivity. I just don't think we're going to win, but I do think, and I think we're going to score, but I think they're going to score as well. So I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. So on that note, I think it's about time that we brought this podcast to an end. Thanks everybody for listening. I think if you want to get in touch with us and leave us any suggestions or any comments, if you've got any features that you'd like us to talk about, if you head to our website, you can email us from the website, which is nonanevernet. You can also tweet us at Our Twitter handle is at none and ever net. We will be back after the international break, where hopefully our anchorman Jamie will be back with us if he doesn't decide to skive again. But I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the None and Ever podcast. Bye-bye.
I'm going to share James's positivity, but we're not going to win.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that wasn't that positive. I think I changed my mind halfway through my prediction. I tend to wing it. I don't tell Jamie this, but you might have sprung me, but I tend to just make it up as I'm going along. Back.
The defenders in the England squad are Michael Keane. Michael Keane. I'm talking here. Listen.
I've just gone on, actually. Tom Heaton.
Can you only hear me?
First in their categories, isn't it?